Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It's the Top Chef Judges Roundtable Podcast here on Reality TV for Half Ups. Hey, everybody. Mike Bloom here. We are nearing the end, really rounding the bend. It's been 12 episodes at this point, but a really fun 12 episodes. And we're going to be talking about the 12th one right here as we see family members come in. We see them really grab this competition by the balls, quite literally in the quick fire. Very exciting episode. And of course, I have a very exciting panel to talk through it. First, let me welcome back somebody who probably at this point is handing out podcasts on reality TV where hap-ups like Art Smith handed out biscuits on Oprah once upon a time. Haley Strong. Haley, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. My podcasts are coming in pairs this week. So this one and some other ones that I'm sure I'll get to by the end. I'm really excited to have our guest on today. I hope you don't mind me getting in the way of you introducing them, because I'm a huge fan of AJ Mass and he's here with us today. I love his books. I have Yes, It's Hot in Here on my shelf right now. I can see it from my seat. So I'm so excited to get to talk to him today.
And I guess without any introduction beyond that, I will give him an introduction because this is somebody who actually is appropriate.
You get to have all the introduction fun. So like once in a while, I want to pop in here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like it because you almost fan over AJ like a lot of the chef testants fan over like every guest judge. So it's nice that we have sort of that moment translated onto the podcast. But AJ is someone that at this point I would consider a podcast family member. So I think it's all too appropriate that we open the door to the observatory. And here he is behind the door. AJ Mass, welcome officially to the roundtable.
Surprise. It's the big surprise. It's me. Hey, guys, what's going on? I've been a longtime listener to the Top Chef roundtable that you guys are putting on, and very excited to be seating at the table. And hopefully we can make a meal of this episode.
Now, AJ, which Voltaggio brother are you representing here?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't have any tattoos, so I don't know. Does that take me completely out of the Voltaggio mix?
Yeah, I don't know. Michael Voltaggio can probably lend you a few tattoos, considering I'm pretty sure he got a few dozen more from the last time we saw him.
Yeah, you know, I've never really been a huge fan of the Voltaggios on Top Chef. As guests, certainly, but went back when they were actually contestant chef testants, wasn't really a fan, but you know, it's always good to see old familiar faces return to be on the other side of the table, as it were.
So AJ, let's get just your general Top Chef experience, because I don't think a lot of people know that. I mean, you are a fan of the show. You just mentioned that you've been watching Voltaggio Brothers since the beginning and probably further back from that. Just briefly, when did you start the show? Who are some of your favorite chef testants and seasons leading up to this point?
Yeah, well, I know that I caught a couple of episodes of season one, but I cannot say that I was a regular viewer at that point. I pretty much started watching. I probably saw the final of season one among the handful of episodes I did see. But from season two on, I've been a regular viewer. Remember the Marcel incident very, very well. So, yeah, I go way back to the you know, the confusion of Ilan, Ilya, and trying to remember which one was which back in the day. Different people, but the names just I always confuse the two.
Well, especially when Ilya got her hair cut short and she looked probably more like Ilan, so it got things a little bit more confusing, especially those that might not have the best vision.
Yeah, exactly. But no, you know, I've always been a fan of the show. You know, I love the whole dynamic between Fabio and Stefan and back in those days of season five. Really, you know, it's every season I tend to pick one or two chefs that just, you know, kind of appeal to me, be it their personality, you know, the Katsuji of it all. You know, I can't taste the food, so I want to be entertained. And so I tend to lean more towards that. If I were actually going to the restaurants, that would be a completely different story. Because certainly there have been a lot of contestants who I'm like, I don't really know if I'd like to eat that. But, you know, if they entertain me, I'm usually going to be on their side.
So that being said, since you're more in it for the entertainment value of it all, what have you thought about Top Chef Colorado? I'm assuming you have had, much like the altitude of last week's elimination challenge, high expectations coming into the season. Did they meet said high expectations so far?
Yeah, I enjoyed many of the contestants. Not all, certainly, but I certainly any of the ones who were left heading into this episode, I would have been very happy to see them win. I don't think there were too many like super villains in this one, you know. So this is not like anyone I'm like rooting actively against. Sometimes that's fun too. Yeah, you know, like I said, I was pretty much on the Carrie bandwagon from episode one. And so my heart is a little bit broken here. Spoiler at this point, but yeah, we can get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Haley, how is your heart at this point? Are the edges crisp like what Joe Stachio tried to do with his take on his father's meal?
No, it's a bit mushy, like that Parmesan crisp on something.
Ooh, yes. Another slight. That's a weird phrase to put. Slight against the dishes. Yeah, this was an interesting episode for a myriad of reasons. One, it's obviously our big emotional episode. I talked before about how I feel like we're now sort of going to be getting these family moments every season, as we should, because I think that, much to your point, AJ, one of the things that I love about this show is not necessarily just getting to see the food, but getting to actually know the people behind them. And I feel like when you see these people's parents, you get to know different sides of them and where they come from. Two big examples I can think of from recent seasons are when May's brother came, and May sort of told the story about how her family, you know, sort of spurned her for pursuing the idea of cooking. And then you have on the other side of that, you have Shirley, whose family also sort of had the same ideas behind cooking. But you have this incredible moment in the finale of season 14 where her mother, who barely speaks any English, comes to her and tells her how proud she is of the meal that she cooked. And it was amazing television. So I was happy to see, you know, different sides of where these people came from. Even, you know, childhood pictures of Joe Stash back pre-Stash was a little surprising to me. Haley, I know you're a big softie for these kinds of things. You just mentioned your heart texture. How did you feel about this episode overall?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch this episode live. Some of us had to watch 3 hours of the Bachelor Winter Games finale. I would say just me out of the trio of us. But
I don't know. Considering the sports affiliation, I'm surprised AJ did not, you know, get a hand in there somewhere.
I was too busy watching curling.
Fair. Completely reasonable. So I didn't get to watch this episode live. So I was spoiled on who went home. I was devastated. But someone also tweeted me like, girl, you are going to sob during this episode. So I was a little prepared going into it. Or else I would have been just an absolute emotional wreck. This was such a like sad but also happy episode. And yeah, if I wasn't prepared, I would have ugly cried the day away.
But would this be a Rourke Luskin-esque schedule cry, considering that somebody told you beforehand what to expect?
No, I don't think I shed any actual tears. Like nothing, no water rolled down my face, but I did get a little misty.
Mm-hmm. AJ, what did you feel about this episode? What do you feel in general about some of these more emotional moments and bringing in the family? Do you feel like, much like Survivor, this should be a hallmark of every season?
Yeah, I what I liked about it is that they weren't here as mere props. You know, they actually incorporated them into the challenge. You know, when it's just them sitting and eating the meal, it's nice. And it's just always nice to see a personal backstory that isn't, you know, when they're all here, I don't feel it's as trying to figure out the edgic and oh, we're learning about their backstory and their family. Are they going home this week? You know, they're all here. So that's taken out of it. But I don't like it if it's just manipulation of emotions. So the fact that they actually spun them off into the challenge and put them to work, I thought that was a nice twist. I would like to see something like that going forward, certainly. It was a little bit different. And, you know, I'm always in favor of different.
Yeah, we'll talk about this later as we actually get into the cabin. I mean, I think they also lucked out in that their parents/grandparents could cook. Like, I can imagine if my child was on Top Chef and they for some reason brought me out there because the rest of the family was unavailable, I would be like, well, I opened up a can of chunky chicken noodle soup and put it in a bowl, and that's my soup. So now you need to do a take on the old family recipe. Like, I think they got very lucky that they brought in people that could actually cook, though I suppose that also was what inspired them to cook in the first place. Before we get to the quick fire challenge of it all, I mentioned this beforehand, but I love Joe Flam's story about going on to Oprah back when he, you know, we learned last episode that he was for some time, you know, apprenticing under Art Smith, and Art Smith sort of served as this culinary drill sergeant, but I guess one of the rewards is that he got to go on to talk shows and hand out biscuits. Haley, I don't know how much of an Oprah follower, OG Oprah follower you are, but can you imagine Joe Flam handing out biscuits to an increasingly raucous audience on the Oprah show?
I can't decide if he would love that or like despise that in his life.
That's a good question. I mean, I feel
because he's a guy who's like fun, but he's also a guy who takes what he does pretty seriously. So I feel like if he had to be reduced to like tossing out biscuits to a bunch of like 40-year-old white women, that like it would be really, you'd be like, what the fuck am I doing this for? Like, I'm a chef. Maybe I'm just projecting on him, but I could see him going both ways, like loving it or just being like, no, I hate this.
AJ, which do you think is more dangerous, being Mr. Met on, you know, a typical day, or being in the audience handing out biscuits during Oprah?
Oh, definitely. It's far more dangerous handing out the biscuits.
You say that as someone who also, like, what was the story where you, like, the president was coming to the was going to the game, and you had like a hit out against you?
Yeah, the Secret Service stopped me and then said, approach the president. We go for the kill shot. Yeah, I was specifically told I would not be getting a photo op that day. It can be quite dangerous to be a mascot. Absolutely. Especially when you're performing in a city where half the population is already predisposed to hate you because they like the other team in the city. But, you know, I've seen some of that Oprah's Favorite Things episodes, and they get a little bit manic. It was a great Saturday Night Live skit with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, the audience, and like, you know, actually eating each other's flesh to try and get the prizes. And I don't think it was too far off the mark.
And moving into this location, AJ, I know you told me before we invited you on here that you actually have been to Telluride before, and this will be the last episode apparently that we're in Telluride. Looks like we are really speaking to what Haley had been wishing this whole entire time of going on this road trip. We're really rushing that into the last like third of the season because we're going to Aspen for the last two episodes. But I am so happy because I have just continually screwed up Colorado geography for the past two episodes. Apparently last week I said Mount Estes instead of Estes Park. There are too many mea culpas for me to just throw out in my general life. But tell me about your experiences about Telluride.
Sure. Well, my wife, Sarah, is an interior designer. But before she got into that business, when I first met her, she was working for a New York City insurance company, working on their marketing materials and whatnot. And they made an insane amount of money in this company. And there were a lot of perks. They would always take us out to like the finest restaurants in New York, you know, and bring the family along kind of thing. And one year they did so well that they up and private jetted the entire department plus spouses to Telluride for a week long trip. And, you know, it's certainly a place I would never have gone before on my own. But, you know, I mean, everything is just super expensive there. And it's, you know, it's the altitude sickness, I will say, that is real. I mean, we spent a week there. I think my wife was sick probably 3 days out of it, so much so we thought perhaps she was pregnant. Because I mean, it was that ridiculous. And it's quick. I mean, you can't breathe, you walk a few steps, and it really takes a toll on you. We did some snowmobiling. We went down to the town where they did the sarsaparilla challenge. I have had sarsaparilla there. It is very sweet and tasty. And then we went on a nighttime sleigh ride that took us actually to Alpino Vino, where they did the challenge last week. They serve one dinner and one dinner only. It is a 5-course tasting menu. I don't know if they've changed it over the years. I did take a look at the menu, and it, it seemed to be what we had. Maybe there are minor differences, but, you know, like you get a bison with gnocchi, and, you know, there's a wine pairing with everything, a tiramisu for dessert, a black truffle kind of pasta dish. Like everything was like top notch. But the problem is that you're eating it at altitude, and even eating at altitude, you know, make a big deal about the boiling point of water and cooking at altitude. Even eating at altitude is like an endurance contest. So it's just a very different experience. So I can understand why, they might have some trouble with the baking and might have some trouble, just even breathing in a kitchen. This is difficult, and the fact that they this week were able to do so well, you know, means they've adjusted to the altitude enough where it's probably not killing them. But I can see where very easily it would.
I kind of want now, if your wife had happened to get pregnant while you were there, just because you could call your kid the Telluride Toddler for a nickname that he probably would not understand.
Yeah.
Not one of your better ones, Mike.
Honestly, it probably is. They're all pretty bad, Haley. You figured that out at this point. Let's get to the quick fire here. I never asked you, Haley. I don't remember if you've ever been on the podcast when we've had the Voltaggio brothers on the show. Do you have any opinions towards them?
I would say Michael's a babe. Would. absolutely would. Brian doesn't do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know their background super well because I didn't see their seasons. I just know from their little snippets on the Top Chef when they come to guest judge. And they don't seem like super dynamic personalities. So it's interesting to me that they keep coming back over and over and over again. I believe that they probably were dynamic personalities on their seasons, maybe. Is that the case?
What I would say is, I think I made this comparison a few seasons ago, that Michael Voltaggio is to Peyton Manning as Brian Voltaggio is to Eli Manning, where they're brothers, obviously, and one like has a good amount of personality over the other one. And look, Brian Voltaggio is a very talented chef. He is the only Top Chef contestant to also go on to Top Chef Masters, where he also finished as runner-up. But suffice to say, there's a reason why Kurt Clark told Haley and I on Twitter this week that he'll forever be his number one draft pick in his heart, because he is the definition of vanilla.
Cool. Yeah, have they ever come on as brothers before? Because I feel like I always see one or the other.
They have. I'm trying to remember if they've come on as brothers. I know that they have done interstitial commercials beforehand where it was the two of them cooking a meal together, which that was when you could really get their dynamic across. But I feel like we've seen, Neji, you might remember this more than I do, I feel like we've seen Michael much more than Brian in the past few years.
Yeah, I think just like you said, he's much more the front of house person for your restaurant wars, whereas, you know, you want him to be interacting with the customers, whereas probably you get more mileage out of the other guy in the kitchen because he's just boring.
And I'm pretty sure they actually were on a team together for restaurant wars as well. I can't remember if one of them was front of house or not, but let's get into the challenge itself. The Voltaggios are there because they come in pairs, much like the delicacy that they are finally dining on after a season of waiting. We are here 12 episodes in, the Dirty Dozen of Rocky Mountain Oysters. First off, AJ, I don't know how adventurous your palate is. Have you ever had Rocky Mountain Oysters before?
Not to my knowledge. You know, it's certainly possible that someone snuck it in on me.
Did you go to any Stephanie Izard restaurants and she might have snuck it to you on the menu after making Joe Flam like spend hours trying it?
No, I can't say that I've had the quote unquote pleasure. I'm always up for trying something once if it's, you know, cooked, especially if it's cooked by a professional chef. This is not something I'm going to seek out. Really, it isn't.
Haley, where do you stand on Rocky Mountain Oysters, especially the way that they were described by the other chefs?
How they were describing it makes me never want to go near them. I would try it if someone else ordered it. I would never order it for myself.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it was what Joe Flam said. It was somewhere between a gland and a brain with a little iron filled in it.
Not for me. Like, they need to stop. Like, sometimes we absolutely need the description of the food. When we're talking about Rocky Mountain oysters, maybe pass on that.
I don't know. I was fine with that one. And I was even fine with Joe Sasto saying, oh, these are like sweetbreads. Because I feel like those types of things, while they're kind of weird, they're sort of in the cultural zeitgeist. But when Adrian pulls out a nice simile out of her head of, oh, they're like cod sperm sacks. That was when I sort of had to steel myself and say, wait, that's a thing. B, that's a thing that people eat. I guess I suppose that people eat anything, but I don't know. AJ, were you knowledgeable about the delicacy that is cod sperm sacks before this episode?
I'm just, you know, really impressed and simultaneously frightened because, you know, I went to high school in the Bronx. You know, I'm rooting for my Bronx girl as well a little bit. But where in the Bronx are you learning that? I just don't get it.
I don't know. I don't know what fish hatchery she spent her time in. I mean, she really knows her fish, and I mean really knows her fish, it seems.
A little too much, I think.
Yeah, just a bit too much. So we work through this challenge. Essentially, they need to create it, a dish featuring Rocky Mountain oysters in two ways in 30 minutes. What I do like here is, once again, Joe Stash is throwing shade towards Carrie for that totally jealous about that fancy toast succeeding so well.
Is she going to make a third fancy toast in a row? Like, Joe, sorry she keeps winning on her toast and you keep making stupid stuff and not winning. Whose fault is that? Not Carrie's.
Though that will quickly get reversed, but I completely agree. But I also do like that later on in the sequence, Carrie's like, I'm making this pate. I mean, I wouldn't spread it on toast or anything. So I think she even sort of realizes that, you know what, maybe fancy toast is not applicable in every situation, AJ.
Yeah, you know, part of the thing when you get this deep into a season, you can't go to the same well again and again. The judges are
really?
Definitely.
Because it seems like everyone's going to the pasta well a heck of a lot.
Yeah, but look, we'll talk about the pasta later. At least it was a different shape, was different, you know, it was done differently. I don't mind if you stick in the same family. I mean, if you got a guy on the show who's going to be, you know, I'm the beef guy, then sure, cook beef. I don't have a problem with that, but just do it differently. So, you know, if she's going to get a toast, is not really done differently. It's bread, toaster, toast, you know. So I think she knows she's going to get clocked for it if she does it again. So I'm not going to hate on the fact that she won twice with it, but I also think it's very wise that she did not go there. Although, you know, hey, as the results come out, maybe she should have just gone full on eggs and toast.
Yeah. Haley, what did you also think about Padma's prairie outfit here? I particularly like the sort of Native American inspired earrings. I know they were out on the prairie, so I feel like she had to really represent that since there wasn't much, you know, landmarks around.
I would describe pretty much all of her outfits as purely magical. I love the way that she is able to be in any environment and just adapt her wardrobe to where she is. A-plus outfit, once again, from Padma. Thank you very much.
Yeah, she's very much a Padmelian in that regard.
Oh, my God.
So much so, Mike, that she actually could have just blended in with the top of the tent behind them. It was the exact same shade of brown.
I also like the giant dinner bell that she rang, obviously, instead of the big timer going on. I know that some people might find these sort of like literally antiquated challenges a little chintzy, but I like sometimes when they get to do this stuff, and obviously when it applies to the cultural aspects. We get to our Rocky Mountain oyster dishes prepared two ways. Joe Sasto, who ends up winning here, has a cornflake breaded Rocky Mountain oyster, a white bean puree, and a brown butter braised, that is a tongue twister, Rocky Mountain oyster. Adrian put the oysters in a dashe, I think it is, with chili oil and fried Rocky Mountain oysters. Joe Flam tried to fry and puree his with white beans and a matricana sauce, which gets a whoa. Very Joey Lawrence of Padma to say that. And then Carrie finishes her off with a Rocky Mountain oyster pate with fried oysters, garlic, and shallots. AJ, of these four, did any stand out to him in particular? Do you agree with the judges' assessments of who was on the top and who was on the bottom?
You know, I think the thing with the pate is, I mean, I like liver. And so the fact that, you know, oh, it's too livery, that probably wouldn't have bothered me as long as it's salted properly. I love liver. So that probably would have been one of my favorite dishes. But if it's not your taste, then I get it. It's something that if you're not, you know, used to it, it can really turn you off. So I'm okay with that. My main real issue with it, with Adrian's dish, was that, you know, it kind of is her story and her arc through the whole season is that, you know, she was very funny saying, oh, it's my ball drop soup. I'm going to make my ball drop soup. What do you have for us, Dashi? Like, she so lacks confidence in just who she is. And it'll be reemphasized later during the family visit. But it's just like, Adrian, just go with it. Be yourself. And until she is unafraid to be herself, I mean, I just don't know what she's doing. I don't think she has a chance to win unless she has that big breakthrough when they suddenly say, this is the Adrian. And we see a little bit of that later on, but I don't know if she can keep it up.
Interesting. Haley, what do you feel about that? Because we talked the past couple of weeks about Adrian sort of being on the upswing here. I think she's going to have finally have her first elimination win 12 episodes in. But do you feel like she's still sort of undergoing the same identity crisis that AJ was just talking about?
Yeah, I would say so. I feel like she might still be affected from, you know, the first part of the competition for her and really trying to figure out her voice, because she has been under bigger name chefs for so long that, you know, she really did kind of struggle to find her voice. I like her a lot, though, and I feel like her story has been really interesting, and I love seeing, you know, the butterfly come out of the cocoon.
Yeah, I was talking with a friend of the show, Justin Karp, about this. It does seem interesting, though. This is probably one of the latest stage, you know, breaking out of the cocoon moments, like you said, Haley. If we're talking about the Top Chef contestants as incubating eggs, she has definitely been the last chick to hatch and so late in the competition. You know, you see someone like Bruce, who had this epiphany back in episode 5. Adrian's having it in like episode 11 and 12. And usually you would think like, oh, the time between, you know, the time between them ending the first part and going into the finals is a time where they sort of get their head back in the game and realize what they want to do. But it sounds like because they didn't go any exotic location, they pretty much just segue directly into going to Telluride and starting the final. So she wouldn't even have time to sort of rest and realize what she's doing. So it just really seems like a different type of situation, interestingly enough.
But that may be a good thing for her, because she's really riding on momentum right now. So she could just keep that going and going and going rather than have to stop and take off for a couple of weeks. And then kind of she might stumble a bit when she comes back, where right now it's like she's motoring and she's, you know, finally getting to that place where we really wanted her to be.
Well, so we have Joe Sasto come out on top here. His first quick fire win, but fifth challenge win overall. I believe that tied him with Carrie at this point. But we segue from that. Joe will be getting an advantage that they'll talk about in a little bit, but everyone has to hop into their BMW X5 as they go cruising around the lakes and they get to the observatory, and who's around the door but it's Adrian's mom, Susan, Joe's dad, Joe Jr., which confused me for a second, because I guess that makes Joe the third. It wouldn't make a lot of sense if he was the first Joe Sasto and his dad was the second, unless there was some weird time travel shenanigans going on. We have Joe Flam's grandmother, Mary, who we talked about all the way back in the Heritage episode, and Carrie's mom, Barbara. AJ, if you could pick one of these family members to have a dinner with, who would you?
Well, first of all, I almost fast forwarded through this whole segment because, you know, I fast forwarded through the car commercial. it's a Hallmark card commercial. Great. It's the show. Product placement. Stop, people. Just stop.
We live in an age with integrated ads, and I think that's just one example of it.
You know, I would actually be fine with it if they just, you know, came right out and just, you know, did the pull out for the car commercial while we watched them drive or something, you know, with the screen in screen, and just like, just say, we're doing an ad here, folks. Don't worry about it. They try and hide it and make this content, but that's neither here nor there. Who would I like to eat with? I think they were all great on varying levels, but I mean, how could you not want to eat with Grandma?
Yeah, Grandma Mary. And she seems to be like, I forget how old Joe Flam says she is, but she's still like kicking it. You know, she's hanging around. She made that meal. She's able to give comments at judge's table. And she's apparently Joe's hardest critic, Haley.
I can see that. There are some times where it's like, whoa, she's getting a little hot and heavy here. If I had to pick the person I would dine with, I think Adrian's mother has a lot of stories to tell.
Yes. Well, Carrie's mom does too, before Carrie sort of interrupts her and gives her the be nice. I do like Carrie's mom as well. I forget who tweeted this to me, but he said that he was watching with his wife and they noticed that apparently Carrie's mother has a tongue piercing. Did either one of you two notice that?
No.
I did not catch that at all, no.
Yeah, so maybe we might need to get some official fact checking on them. But that was tweeted to me, so I wanted to throw that out into the universe. But it turns out that these four family members have prepared a sort of a family recipe for them. Joe Jr. made pig's feet and lasagna. Susan made a gumbo. Mary made rigatoni and meatballs. Again, it basically ate Italian food with like some beef stroganoff and some gumbo on the side, essentially. But we start to get a little misty-eyed, and really the emotional component comes in when obviously the Sasto family recipe is really tied into Joe Stash's mother, who we found out again back in the Heritage episode. She died of breast cancer, I think about 7 years ago or something. And I mean, it definitely hit me. We've heard that before, and Joe has said it a couple times, but I think there's something about actually seeing Joe Jr. there and seeing this man clearly still bereaving his wife's death, especially talking about it, that really got to me personally. And I don't know, this might have been me reading too much into the edit, AJ. I had feared that we get sort of another Kwame-esque moment from Joe Sasto, where even though he has the advantage, he will fail because he gets too emotionally distracted by the connotation of the dish.
Oh, that's certainly possible. You know, I must be honest that it was really hard for me and my wife to watch. My wife's mother passed away in April. My mom passed away in August. So the wound is a little fresh there. And it was, you know, we were feeling it. So I don't think I was thinking certainly about strategy and edit at that point so much as we were fighting each other for the tissue box.
Well, the other interesting story that we get, I feel like, is from the Adrian perspective. Adrian's mother, Susan, she always spent her time in a restaurant. She worked as a waiter and then a host, and then she worked her way up to a restaurant manager. So Adrian was essentially raised in a restaurant. Haley, I don't want to psychoanalyze Adrian too much, but do you feel like that might be a contributor as well into her sort of identity crisis, that cooking is all she knows? And if she doesn't know cooking, she doesn't know who she is.
Ooh, interesting point. Yeah, I could see that being the case. My degree is not in psychology, so I can't go all the way there with you. But I can see why that could be the case.
Yeah, you missed it on your area of expertise when they had the hospitality challenge a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So we get to the idea for the elimination challenge. As Padma and the Voltaggio brothers, I love the Voltaggio brothers, by the way, when the families come in and it cuts to this one shot, the two of them just sort of standing around awkwardly like, is this a wrap for us? What are we supposed to do here? But they announced that the challenge is to create an innovative dish based on your family's dish. I like Adrian sort of musing that her mom should have made a cookie because she doesn't want to make the 90-minute gumbo. But we get some sort of, after the challenge is revealed, we get some pep talks going on here, especially Susan to Adrian. And again, this ties interestingly into the arc that you're talking about, AJ, of how Adrian is sort of realizing, you know, you've been in everyone's kitchen but your own, Susan says, and how she realizes that, you know, her identity should not be who she's worked for. Her identity should be more so the stuff that she's worked with and how that sort of informed her cuisine, which seems to be, I would say, like decadent Southern might be the style that Adrian is going for. AJ, I know you just gave us our thoughts about Adrian sort of in the first half of the episode, but as we're getting to around this point and taking into account the second half of how things turned out, how are you feeling about Adrian coming into the final three here?
Well, I think what was great about this is that, you know, her mom is not someone who's been sitting around watching all these episodes. She just knows her daughter. And, you know, the fact that she is able to immediately identify what's wrong and put it in a terminology that can probably really connect with Adrian. It's like, it's what I've certainly been noticing the whole season. What she's been told is like, you need to be you. You can't cook other people's foods. Now it's like kind of ironic that's in the challenge where they said, hey, cook this other person's food.
Yeah.
But you know, do it your way. But I think having her mother there to just like say, I know you, I know this is what's going on with you. Now get over it, slap upside the head, cook. I think certainly to go along with what Haley was saying about not having the, you know, the 2 week break and just going, you know, boom, boom, boom. I think she has better chance now in my eyes than I mean, I thought she was out at five. I thought she'd be out at four. I hadn't been so impressed enough with her, even though I like her a lot and I her food looks great. I just thought she would not have the confidence to be able to compete at the final three, you know, the final five, the final four, final three. So hopefully with a win now, the momentum will carry over because it'll stick in her head long enough for her to feel confident going into maybe one or two more meals.
Yeah. Haley, Adrian is now the last person on your draft team. Do you have confidence in her at this point to continue this good streak for the past few episodes and possibly win this whole season?
I mean, I would love to see it. It would be a really awesome story. Would I put $500 on her? That just probably wouldn't be the direction I would go. Like, I would, don't get me wrong, like, she is now my rooting interest here. But if I had to pick someone, it wouldn't be her.
All right, well, let's get to the challenge that she does end up excelling in here as we go to 221 South Oak, the restaurant of fan favorite Eliza Gavin from Top Chef Season 10. Haley, I'm sure you remember the magnanimous effect that Eliza played over the course of Top Chef Seattle.
I would say that I watched Top Chef Seattle within the last year. When they said Eliza, I was like, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, I'll admit, I thought initially they were talking about Eliza might have been one of the people who was eliminated because that was one of the seasons where they did
too. Like one of like the first four people before they actually even started the season. I thought that could have been it too, and it wasn't.
But no, from what I'm checking, she went on in episode six. She didn't win any challenges up to that point, but she made it all the way to 12th place in that season. So maybe just another reason to go back and watch Top Chef Seattle, which is such a fun season.
I really should. That was a great. That was probably my favorite season so far.
But the fun thing about this that I saw was, so Joe Sasto gets this, you know, 30-minute head start, and he goes in to cook, he runs to the kitchen, and the other three get to meet with Eliza, which brings up so many questions. First, did Joe Sasto get to meet Eliza, or did he just, like, get to go through the back door and start cooking? Secondly, did Eliza have to distract the other three chefs for half an hour until she could awkwardly let them into their restaurant? There are a lot of questions I have about circumstances here, AJ.
Yeah, well, you know, I try not to dwell too much on the production side of things, because once I start doing that, then my conspiracy hat comes on. And you know, I love this show, and I think that the judges do a really good job of offering up rationale for their decisions, even if you know you may not agree with it. You know, we can get into that as we get to the elimination here, but I think that this show would be better served more often than not to kind of do the runway switch, Project Runway switch to the blind runway, where the judges don't know whose outfit is whose. Even though once you get deep into a season, you've gotten to know people's styles and you can kind of figure it out. But just to give a little layer of preliminary voting that takes who you want to win out of it. And I think in Top Chef, I see a lot of decisions that sometimes you just go, look, it's bad enough we got Last Chance Kitchen where it's really whoever Tom wants is going to win. I feel that enters into things in the regular show as well. Obviously, in a challenge like this where they know going in who's making what dish, you can't do that. I'm fine with that once in a while, but I really think the fact that this is not blind really factors into the decisions that were made, especially in this one.
What do you think about that, Haley?
That would be really cool to see a blind challenge once in a while. But like AJ said, at this point in the season, it's really hard to do that because you know what their flavors are and what they're trying to do. I don't know. It's hard to say what's going to work and what's not going to work because you could change things and then be like,
Well, you know, it's just the thing that they do on Project Runway is the judges don't go into the workroom. It's they have a mentor, right. and Tim goes into the workroom because, you know, what I really found annoying is that, you know, what was the big problem last week? Well, you promised us you were going to do this and you changed your mind. Whereas, you know, if Carrie had done that, the Beef Wellington and it had been horrible, they would have said, why didn't you switch it up?
Yeah, so, that's fair. Yeah.
You know, so I just think there should be a disconnect between, you know, Tom shouldn't go, if he's the head judge, he should not be the one who goes into the kitchen and says, hey, what you do? I think that it just, he knows who's doing what, and he gets to preemptively kind of figure out whose dish he's going to make some comments about, because he's trying. I don't even think it may be intentional. It could be completely subliminal and, you know, just subconscious. But I think it has an impact, and it's something that I wish that could be taken out of the show.
Now, that being said, would that idea work in this challenge, though? Because
this
concept of the challenge is, hey, this is your family's dish. It's not like, you know, a panel will put on a blindfold and a pair of earmuffs so she doesn't hear which family cooked which dish. But I do think your idea is interesting. I do wish that we would get more of sort of these blind challenges, especially we talked about this a few weeks ago with the whole Bruce of it all. You know, are there certain times when the judges might forgive or slight things towards people that they know how they cook, or they know the way the things that they prepare because they know what they can prepare in the future? But this might not necessarily be the challenge to do it, but I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, you couldn't do it this challenge. Although, you know, if I were producing the show and creating challenges, you know, maybe I have all of the family members fill out guest judge cards, you know, take your own person out of it and rank the other three dishes, 1, 2, and 3, and make maybe give the win to that. And, you know, it changes things a little bit. Just take it out of the realm of conspiracy theorists. And I would like to see a little bit more of that.
All right, let's get into each dish itself. We'll start with Joe Sasto here. He decided to take the pig's feet and the lasagna and turn it into a rotola with braised chicken, mushrooms, and Swiss chard. He tries to do this last-minute thing of, looks like he bruleed the top of it to try to mimic those crispy edges that you get sometimes from the ravioli, which didn't go over too well with the judge. But I will say overall, this is probably the most overwhelming positive commentary I've heard about a set of dishes in quite a long time. It feels like they were very, very nitpicky, which... it's crazy, Haley. I feel like from what we were talking about, the judges were saying only 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would not imagine that they would be so overwhelmingly positive only a couple weeks later.
Yeah. Do you think Padma was throwing shade when she said that this was the best meal they had all season? Like, finally, you guys are doing this. Where last season we got, this is one of the best meals I've ever had on Top Chef in episode 2.
Yeah. To be fair, though, Padma did say in episode 2 of this season that Chris and Tanya's sheep's milk feta ice cream was the best dessert she's ever had. So they had some credit there early on too.
Great point. When they announced that Adrian was the winner, and then they said, oh yeah, there's no bottom two. I was like, okay, so like, are we not going to send anyone home here? But of course, no, it's, I don't know if it was like a bottom three or like a middle three or a really great, but still one of you has to go three. Like, it was like, no, like, why are you cutting Carrie when her dish was still fantastic? Like, I get that that's the show and I have to deal with it, but I was a little heartbroken.
Yeah, I think that's the deal. I think that last one you suggested where it was like, sometimes it's a, okay, you all did not do well, but one of you is going home. But this was a case where everyone did well, but unfortunately, due to the construct of the game, we had to send someone home. Maybe they could have done a non-elimination and eliminated two people in the next episode. But what I do appreciate about Top Chef, especially in these finale stages, you know, we speculated about a final three a couple weeks ago, but since All Stars, they have stuck to the final two format, even in casts of like 17 to 19 people. They still stick to that head-to-head final two, which I appreciate, as, you know, some of the reality shows that we cover might not necessarily do that. Going back to Joe Sasto's dish, AJ, what did you think about the way it was executed here? Do you feel like it harkened close enough to what his father had prepared?
Yeah, you know, I think when they tell them to take the dish and make it your own and hint at it, I think you kind of are given the freedom to either replicate it and elevate it or do something different, but, you know, that honors the ingredients. You know, just listening to their commentary, I think he did that. And I actually really liked the look of it. I thought it was very creative. And so, you know, could you quibble over the blow torching? Sure, absolutely. But I thought, generally speaking, it looked like he took some creative risks. And, you know, they didn't complain about the taste, a little too much salt. Well, you know, how many times would they say not enough salt? So that's, you know, It's nitpicking, and you're going to have to nitpick on this, but I don't think you can say that he wasn't creative with it. And that was kind of the point of the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Haley, what'd you feel about Joe?
I was fine with it. I wasn't blown away by creativity or anything. It was just kind of like pasta roll of, like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel bad saying that because obviously it was probably like a really delicious dish. But this isn't, out of the four, this is probably the last one I would choose personally to eat.
Is it because of the pig's feet?
I mean, that definitely helps in that decision, yes. But I don't know. I just wasn't blown away by the presentation of it, by the idea of it, you know, just, I don't know. It was fine. It's obviously better than anything I could ever dream to make, but.
What I will say about Joe Sasto is I do feel like he is probably the most visually artistic chef out of the four of them, where I feel like all the dishes that we've seen from him, they even talk about it this episode where Graham says, well, Joe really captured the spirit of the challenge. It's inspired, but a little more artsy. And it goes back to that Keegan comment that Joe really got stuck in his craw halfway through the season about, you've got this big bag of tools that you can't carry. I feel like one of those tools is really to create like a beautiful plate. And while the rotel, I agree, Haley, is a little bit simple in concept, I think it like AJ said, I think it looked good. I agree that I don't think it would necessarily be the thing that would make my mouth water the most. But what I have started to notice is that in terms of actually like putting things on the plate from a visual perspective, which again is the only way we can take it in as viewers, I do feel like Joe's doing a great job on that front. All right, let's move on to the next dish. Carrie, she has a beef stroganoff and she decides to do a raviolo with it, stuffing it with buffalo sausage. She wants to go for the game meat in honor of her father, who was a hunter, with some mushroom duxelles, herbs creme fraiche, and caramelized onions. AJ, this ends up being the losing dish, but only really by a smidge, by a use of sauce, if you will. Did you feel like this was the worst dish out of the four?
It was certainly one of the bottom two, probably, in my mind. I think it's between her and Flam, but you know, I think using the buffalo was a really good idea. Bison is what they have up there. Like I said, when I was at Alpino Vino, they serve bison. That's their regular dish. So I think using that kind of meat, it's delicious and it's different to most people. So I do think it was, she's the local. She should take advantage of the local flavors. And I think she did that there. Do I think she deserved to be eliminated on basically Tom saying I would have done this instead? No, I think that was a little unfair. But then again, if there wasn't enough sauce, there wasn't enough sauce. And I don't think anyone objected to that too much, although she was using the egg as a sauce. So and she was complimented for that decision. So it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm. Haley, what did you feel towards Carrie's take on beef stroganoff here? Did she Strogan pull it off?
You really need to beef up your resume, your joke resume, Mike. Beef Stroganoff is something that always kind of weirds me out as a dish for whatever reason. Just the look of it kind of like, I'm kind of thrown off by it. But this version I am super into. Raviolo stuffed with buffalo sausage. Like, that sounds freaking delicious. Put caramelized onions on anything and I'm super in. I can understand why the judges wanted a little more sauce looking at the dish later on when I went to go back and look at them again. It was a little plain looking and it looked like a nice like sauce bath would have been a really great compliment for it.
Yeah, I feel like I do understand that, like, this was a small quibble, but I do feel like it's one of those things where because the sauce is a big element of the beef stroganoff, I feel like it's sort of needed to be there in a larger capacity than maybe it was. But that being said, you mentioned the use of the egg before, AJ. I think Brian talks about it a bit. I liked the inventive use of the egg on top to sort of serve as an egg noodle. It sort of just makes it, sort of helps everything taste like that. Like, that's also a key component of the beef stroganoff. I also seem like Carrie might have had, maybe Carrie had a sauce idea, but she was distracted. This definitely seemed to be, as they point out, the most flustered she'd been with the kitchen. Because she was going for this raviolo and the pasta really wasn't working. We hadn't seen a lot of pasta from Carrie so far. And so I guess, you know, her dip into the pasta pool was not necessarily the best one, but I feel like she still did a good job with it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, the thing that you have to also remember is that they are cooking at altitude. I mean, the altitude hasn't gone away. And it does impact the timing and the fact that even with that kind of handicap there. They were all able to avoid being called out for, hey, this is overcooked, undercooked. The reason you have to crisp up the lasagna is because of that. They all pretty much avoided really being called out for it. And I think that's just a testament to how talented this quartet is.
Right. Moving on to the winning dish here. Adrian's Mom's Gumbo, butter poached king crab leg and shrimp with a Trinity fried and Dewey chips and rice. Now, Adrian implements this strategy to sort of help her 90-minute gumbo. Let me cook each element separately rather than in one big pot together. That way it can bring in all these sort of disparate tastes together into one big, quite literal melting pot. And it turns out to be the correct strategy. Haley, when you heard Adrian say she was implementing this, did you feel like this might corroborate in a winning dish?
I was a little nervous just because I was with the gumbo. What you really want is all these beautiful, rich flavors to really meld together. And when you're cooking each element separately, what you could run into is those flavors not coming together and not being really a gumbo. But Adrian was able to not have to deal with that situation and made a dish that looked so freaking bomb. Like, I wanted to cry. Like, I want to cry thinking about it. Like, the king crab leg. And then the way she served the rice in the shell, I was like, yes, girl, this is great. Oh, my God. My mouth is watering even thinking about it.
AJ, do you have such similar sentiment as Haley does towards Adrian's winning dish here?
Yeah, I mean, I love gumbo, and so this is certainly, of the four dishes, the one I would have said, you know, here's my chip, can I please take that one? Thank you. And I don't even like crab, and if it's done well in a gumbo, I will eat it. So this certainly was the most appealing to me in terms of description and in terms of just looking at how she executed it. I was not surprised when she was the outright winner. And certainly once I saw the faces of the judges, I knew she wasn't going home. Whereas if you'd asked me entering this episode who I thought was going home, she would have been the one.
Though, to your point that you mentioned before, AJ, about her cooking other people's meals, she did call the dish Mom's Gumbo, not My Gumbo.
Indeed. Something to watch going forward.
I mean, if she does go to the finale, it'll be interesting to see, because the finale is just cook whatever you want. It'll be interesting to see, you know, will she go the Chris route of like, this represents Eric Repair, this represents my mother. And so she just makes it all about the people that she's experienced on her culinary journey. Let's finish off here with Joe Flam's ode to his grandmother, pork and veal enelotti with pomodoro pasta, parmesan, and basil. Haley, how did you feel Joe Flam did here?
I thought he did a pretty solid job. Again, probably not the most high concept, interesting dish, but it's a very comforting dish. And I think that really fits with what the challenge was to make this dish that your person had made and elevate it and make it something great. And I think Joe did a good job at that.
Yeah, AJ, I'm trying to figure out, is Joe, does he specialize in like rustic food, comfort food? I know there's a difference between the two, but I've still been really trying to figure out his style. I know that he's a big pasta guy, but it feels like he goes for other things. And this might be an example of that, what Haley was just talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't watch Last Chance Kitchen at all, so I don't know what he was doing when he was off camera to get himself back in, but I definitely think he probably had the hardest job here because the dish was so simple. And, you know, that's no fault of his own. You know, this is what happens when you're just, you know, handed the card of this is what grandma cooked. This is what I got to cook. Essentially, pasta and meatballs. It's not that difficult, but it's so difficult to screw up. So I think he probably had the hardest job in terms of making it something that would be top chef worthy and so simple that it was something he could have easily screwed up. So the fact that he didn't screw it up and they didn't really have too much negative to say about it, I think that was probably what tipped it in his favor into why he is staying and Carrie went home. But, you know, in terms of had he selected a meal like this, I don't think he would have still been in this competition if this was a dish that like he maybe had selected on his own.
I think it's also really funny because, as I mentioned before, remember, Joe was the one who did, you know, grandma's, you know, squid ink pesto recipe back in episode 4. And Tom quipped, well, sometimes grandma's recipes aren't that good. And now they had to deal directly with one of grandma's recipes. So I love that how that comes full circle.
If I was Padma, I would have told grandma about that and like had her lose her mind on Tom. Like, that would have been funny.
How did they miss that opportunity?
Maybe that was shown off camera and they just they didn't want to put it in just because of the general heartwarminess, and not just the heartburn that comes with all the pasta that they were having. I thought Joe Flam also had this really interesting tomato water technique, which brought to mind for me the hot ham water of the development of it all. But I guess I was trying to figure out what it was. I guess it was just that he was using the tomato to actually like make the pasta in, so that way it became more of a concentrated tomato flavor to sort of bring the rigatoni elements into it, and it appeared to work. I don't know, Haley, did you have any understanding of what this tomato water was?
No, of course not. I had no idea what was going on.
Just wanted to check.
I don't. Sorry, I have nothing interesting to say about that.
I also like Joe Flam's sexy talking his food as well. We saw in Last Chance Kitchen, I don't know, you didn't get to see this, AJ, but apparently Joe Flam likes to do a lot of singing when he's under pressure, and not just singing the song under pressure, assumingly. But here, when he talked to the Anneloni, he said, oh yeah, you're sexy, you little bitches. So we'll have two more episodes of Joe Flam, hopefully dirty talking the pasta. Haley, to cut the tension here, everyone decides to kick back a hit on the old wine bong. Now, I know you are a wine consumer. Have you ever invested in a wine bong before?
I have not. I was very surprised at this. Fun background on me. I didn't even start drinking until I was like 22. So that might not sound that crazy for you Americans out there, but the drinking age here is 19, so you can start early. I chose not to. I didn't drink at all in university, so I miss those really great drinking out of bong things days of my life. So now I just stick to regular plastic wine glasses. That's how I like my wine served to me.
AJ, I was trying to figure out how the wine bong worked. First of all, where did they get a funnel? And did they clean all of these instruments before they poured the wine down it?
Oh, probably not. it's probably just a spur of the moment kind of, hey, here's a bottle. Hey, well, look at this tube. Let's have some fun. I mean, you know, they are probably back in that stew room for hours and hours, especially when you realize how difficult a decision this was for the judges. So I can totally see them just getting punchy and just trying to do whatever they can to try and just pass the time under what is clearly a stressful situation. And again, oxygen deprived.
Good point there.
All right, let's get to the elimination here, because suffice it to say, Carrie's elimination, compounded with, I would say, Chris's elimination from last week, definitely has at least a section of the Top Chef fandom a bit up in arms, because I think those two definitely brought some personality and some likability to the show. And some have even gone on to say that, who should I root for now that there are all these people gone from the competition? AJ, how do you feel about those sentiments?
You know, like I said, I've expressed my sentiments on how I feel that Tom particularly, but the judges panel in general, plays to their favorites. They know who they want to win. And I believe that with few exceptions to the rule, they judge accordingly. I mean, obviously sometimes a dish is just so bad that they can't help but eliminate the person, but somehow that person seems to make it all the way back through Last Chance Kitchen when that does happen. So again, the fix, is it in? I don't know entirely, but I do think that it does have an impact in terms of likability of the three remaining contestants. I mean, look, the people that you like, of course you're going to root for, and you're going to be upset when they go home. I was rooting for Carrie. I'm upset that my Lauren Ambrose lookalike is now 6 feet under. I am very, very upset about that. And she was the one I was rooting for. And now that she is out, I don't really have a rooting interest going forward. But at the same time, you know, that's what the show is. You know, if it was a scripted show, the people who write the scripts are allowed to plot it out however they want. And if you don't agree and you don't like it, make your own show. I don't, as long as someone is not being, you know, voted out of this competition, kicked out by the judges, packing their knives and going after they cook something that every single soundbite they had was, this is the best meal I ever had. This is the best meal I ever had. You know, pack your knives and go. As long as I can justify it in the edit, I you have to live with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you can't hardly wait until Carrie comes back for Top Chef All-Stars, right?
Indeed, indeed. You're absolutely correct on that one. I just really... I hope she doesn't have to come back through Last Chance Kitchen for yet another go round, you know, be eliminated again and come back. I hate Last Chance Kitchen, in case you haven't figured that out by now. I don't like the format. I don't like the fact that they get, at least, you know, coming back in a little bit later as opposed to right into the finale is a step in the right direction. I just wish there was also some penalty weight to it. Whereas, you know, if Flam comes back and there is a competition this close, then Flam has to go home. He is at a handicap. He can't finish in the bottom two and make it to the next round. I think you have to have some sort of a handicap for having been eliminated once. And maybe I'm just a Carrie apologist on this one, but I would say that regardless.
Interesting. I feel like you're talking about the Top Chef version of the marked for elimination penalty from The Amazing Race, of like, you didn't do well on this leg, so if you don't come in first and do really well on the next leg, you have to get punished for it.
Well, you know, just at least have some sort of like... We don't even have to see it, but I feel that if there's some sort of automatic ranking coming into it, or, you know, like, hey, he's back for this quickfire where he gets to steal all the ingredients. And so basically he's picking to cook what he wants. You know what? If he doesn't win that quickfire, he's out. Like, do something like that where, you know, he has to win. And in that situation, you would have to make it a blind competition or something where the judges didn't know whose dish was whose. You have to make it seem honest for the viewers, or else you're going to get this criticism from the fans. And you know what? Even if I don't think it's valid criticism, I think it's deserved criticism, because, you know, you're playing with fire when you have a judging system that's this way.
Haley, give me your thoughts about Carrie's elimination and what we've just been speaking about whether, you know, we feel that there are, that maybe comparing her resume against someone like Joe Flam's, maybe that should have saved her above him.
First of all, I am heartbroken, devastated, crying tears of pure sadness.
Sauce.
Because I loved Carrie. I loved Carrie so much. I thought her story was really great. She was a hometown girl. She started kind of rough in the beginning, and then by the second episode, she was just killing it every single week. And now she's gone, and I hate everything, and I hate everyone, and that's not true. but I feel like, this is reality television, like, my favorites have just kind of, like, been out and out and out. Like, I was rooting hard for Fatima, and then she was gone on stupid effing nachos. And then now Carrie's gone because she cooked a really great dish, but like, ooh, we could use like a teaspoon more sauce on this. That would have been great. And I agree with AJ, because I'm super biased right now, that Joe should have been out, because he came, you know, he's been out before. But if I'm looking at it completely unbiased, I do love the idea of, at least in the first episode that they're back, they have to face some sort of penalty for being kicked out before.
I feel like, at least for me, I talked about season 13, where halfway through, I really loved the group of people that were left. But then you lose Karen, and you lose Kwame, and you lose Marjorie, and you lose Isaac. So you're like, oh, this is the ending, I suppose. And no shade towards the final three.
Shade. I'm throwing shade. I want to throw as much shade as humanly possible.
I feel like we may be going in that direction, where we're like, oh, we love Carrie, we love Fatima, we love Chris, you know, and then we lose them all. It's like, okay, we have the two Joes and Adrian. Okay, and look, I think that they've all put out great food, and I've really enjoyed some of their journeys, especially someone like Adrian, who has sort of had this identity crisis and is really finding herself now. But it's so interesting that, like, even at the final eight or seven, I would not expect that these three would be the final three, which, again, I think speaks towards the competition level and just the varied levels of the sense of high cookery that's going on among these people. But it should be an interesting ending nonetheless. And to talk a bit about Carrie, yeah, Carrie was a really fun story as well. We talked about this throughout the season, but I feel like it's very rare that we have someone do as badly in the beginning as she did. Not a lot of people remember that Carrie could have arguably gone home in that first challenge. She was it was between her and Melissa. She was very, very much on the bottom. And I do not think, as good of a chef she is, that she would come back from Last Chance Kitchen, considering the vets that were in there. Considering how she was even able to rally the next episode when she did that cheese dumpling that like really stoked everyone's fires. And then she just kept going from there. You know, her and Joe Sasto are still tied for the most cumulative wins on this season because she's done such innovative stuff, but such simple stuff. She won twice with freaking toast. And it wasn't Joe Sasto just because, you know, it was stupid toast. It's because she really did innovative takes on toast. Another great example is in the Brooke breakfast challenge when it's cook with Nutella. Okay, Nutella is something that's usually sweet. Carrie decides to go in a different direction and go with a savory dish. And that's what got her a win. I feel like she had a really interesting way of looking at the culinary field that separates herself from some of these others who, again, go to these institutions and say, okay, this is the way that I need to cook everything. She has a great POV. And yes, it might have some downsides. There might be a couple times when she screws up. But I've been so happy to see her determination, her story, to hear about her family and where she comes from, how she was a competitive skier who got outclassed. Now she's a chef who feels that she got outclassed. But now she's leaving with her head held high because she feels confident in herself now. I think that's just a fantastic storyline. I feel like Fatima has fan favorite in the bag, but I would hope that Carrie is at least runner up because I do feel like she's had a fantastic mark on this season.
Let's raise a glass, a fancy toast to Carrie.
Let's raise a bong. No,
I was just going to say, let's raise a wine bong, a glass. Come on, let's do that. Let's get wild here, guys.
Let's size up the final three a bit. Again, an interesting final three here. The two Joes and Adrian. We have three possible scenarios for the final two, where we have Joe Sasto and Adrian, which they talked about a little bit at the beginning with Joe Sasto being like, oh, Adrian's on my heels. We have Joe Flam and Adrian, which is interesting because they're close friends. And we have, as was alluded to in the very beginning of the season, the Joe Down Throwdown, much like the Battle of the Davids in American Idol 7 between the two Joes. I would love to go around the horn to finish things off here and put in your prediction at this point as to who you think the final two are. And in that matchup, who you think would take it sight unseen. Haley, let's start with you.
My heart wants Adrian and Joe Sasto. What we're probably going to get is Joe Sasto and Joe Flam, with Joe Sasto probably taking it in either scenario.
What do you think, AJ?
There is probably a 97% chance that Sasto is already the winner of this competition. The only way he loses is if Adrian's dish at the final three is so much better than Flam's that they have to eliminate him. If Flam makes a mistake, they want the Joe Down Throwdown. They just do. Adrian has to just do something phenomenal and Flam make a mistake. It would probably be the better finale, though, if it was Adrian versus Stash. So I'm not necessarily thinking it can happen. I just don't think they want it to happen. But again, if she makes it to the final against Sasto, she also has to cook the best meal of her life, and Sasto has to make a mistake because this is Stash's to lose at this point. I would be stunned if he doesn't win.
Yeah, it is so surprising that, again, looking at all of these chefs and the caliber of people and personalities, that Joe Sasto has won four elimination challenges up there with some of Top Chef's best. It's crazy to think about, but he's really sort of snuck in there as a black sheep to win this thing. I'm going to go for Adrian and Joe. Again, this is maybe Joe Stash. Maybe this is more so.
There's two of those.
That was really hedging my bets there. Wondering if anyone would pick up on it. Maybe this is me, again, reading too much into the edit. But again, we get this moment in the beginning where Joe Sasto says, like, oh, you know, I won this challenge, but Adrian nearly did as well. I think Adrian might be coming up on my heels. I don't know. I feel like they might have put that in to sort of hint towards a possible Adrian Joe Stash scenario where they're hinting towards a real, you know, neck and neck competition. And so maybe they lose out on Joe Flam. It would be interesting, though, if they had the Joe Down Throwdown, because not only are their names similar, but their cuisine is so similar. I saw this in a comment actually on the AV Club review of this article. I wonder if they could do like almost a battle of the pasta dishes where it's like, okay, you make the best pasta dish you can. You make the best meatball dish you can. You make the best lasagna dish you can, where you know they're going to cook the same type of food, so let's directly compare them against one another. Sort of like what they did back in the aforementioned season 10 with Brooke versus Kristen. That would be a really interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, I think that could be an interesting way of doing it. I didn't like that finale, though, so I'm not a fan of that format, but let them really show off what they do well. So if they know going in that those two are going to be there and they can tweak the challenge at that point, I'm fine with that. If you know, I would actually prefer the finale to be something where they tailor it to both chefs so that both have an equal chance, rather than have a finale challenge just set up that, you know, when they get there and it's like, oh, well, that's this person's cuisine and then the other person really is already playing at, 20 steps behind. So I hope that they're able to tailor it depending on which pair does make it to the final.
Well, we shall see which pair makes it to the final next week as the final three go to Aspen for the final stages of Top Chef Colorado. Looks like we are doing some fishing out of the river. Looks like the elimination challenge is happening at the Food and Wine Classic in Aspen, which they hype up as one of the Top Chef prizes every single season. So there should be...
Quick question. So does this cooking at the Food and Wine Expo, is this counted as their prize, or do they get to go to next year?
That would be so cheap if they're like, there's your, like, oh, I get to go to the cook at the Food and Wine Expo. No, you already did. You did that
you
yesterday.
Did. Oh, God, how funny would that be?
Or like, hey, I got to win the BMW X5, right? No, you already drove in it. Remember to go meet your dad.
And you get $100,000.
Awesome. Indonesian dollars.
Actually, you know, well, it's been a lot of money to put on this whole show, so we've really paid you in that. So, what was your dollars? Well, you know,
we invested it in the experience of Top Chef, so really, we're all rich now. Oh man, we'll see if that ever happens. I would love to just see the reactions from the chefs, but we shall see if the Food and Wine Classic, this will be a run up to the person who eventually wins this. I want to thank you both for coming on, AJ especially. It's so much fun to have you come on and talk about Top Chef and give your thoughts, especially your hot takes about Last Chance Kitchen. Where can people find you on social media? And I'm you've got a lot of podcasts going on in the hopper, right?
Yeah, well, you can find me on Twitter at AJ Mass. That's the easiest way to find me. And in terms of podcasts, obviously, Mike knows very well about The Hamster Factor, a podcast where I talk about movies with Mike Bloom. So check that out as well. And I host a trivia podcast called Beat My Guest, a weekly tough trivia podcast. But it's not so much about getting the questions right, it's just about getting more questions right than my guests. So check that out as well. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And for those of you who haven't checked out Top Chef Junior yet, I am Team Henry all the way. I know he didn't win, but I am still Team Henry all the way.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, AJ, that, you know, that ended like a month ago, right?
Yeah, but who really is tuning into Universal Kids on the regular? You got to track it down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would definitely recommend checking out Beat My Guest as well as The Hamster Factor. Beat My Guest, I was on it. A number of other people from the RHAP community were on it, including former hosts of this roundtable. So be sure to check that out. It's a lot of fun. Haley, as we talked about in the very beginning of this podcast, you have so much stuff going on. What with the Bachelor Winter Games? What have you been up to?
God, I have just been podcasting up a storm the last few weeks. Great for those of you who like my voice, not great for those of you who don't. So we'll start back with last Sunday, where we recorded the newly host game, where Mike was the host, and it was a lot of fun. So if you haven't listened to that already, check that out. Of course, we're doing the regular Bachelor coverage. I'm doing that with Amy. I was on the Dom and Colin podcast this week to talk about the challenge and update our big old draft for that. We have a Bachelor Winter Games podcast coming up this weekend with a really special guest, so that I'm super excited for. And of course, the Top Chef podcast. But if you've made it this far, you've already listened to it. So
yes, please listen to the Top Chef podcast. I would really appreciate that. Make sure you're subscribed.
Can I be on?
Of course.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Yes, of course.
You know what you
should
do if you've gotten this far and you want to continue to support us? take your significant other's phone, go to the podcast app and download this podcast.
I like that.
That's the simplest way to help us out, you know?
Perfect. And we disavow any sort of like strife that might occur in your relationship.
Yeah, don't
as
read
a
the
result.
Text messages.
Yeah, exactly. Don't look at the pictures.
Just go straight to the podcast app.
And our Top Chef only feed, especially since that contains all the Top Chef podcasts. But again, if you want to subscribe to Reality TV for Half Pups, that's where you get Haley and Amy's fantastic coverage of The Bachelor and its Bachelor universe. You've got the ongoing coverage of The Challenge. You've got the coverage that I do of RuPaul's Drag Race, which will now continue apparently in perpetuity for the rest of the year. Also, check out all the stuff I'm doing. I'm at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. I have exit interviews coming out of my eyes at this point between The Amazing Race, Celebrity Big Brother, Top Chef. I just got my interview with Chris back that I posted earlier on this week. I'll be talking with Carrie soon on as well. All the Survivor stuff that's coming out between the exit interviews and the RHAP B&B, which will be back this weekend as well. There's so much stuff going on in the reality TV verse, but I am so happy that you are all there listening and hopefully enjoying. Hashtag, let's think of some. I know Padmeleon really stuck out to me personally.
I love that. Yeah, I'm in.
All right, let's go with Padmeleon for people who made it all the way to the end of this podcast. Again, AJ, thank you so, so much for coming on. It was truly a pleasure to have you cook your own meal and provide it to us so we can give our takes on your takes, if you will. Haley and I will be back next week with another great set of guests to talk about the penultimate episode of Top Chef 15. I can't believe we were already at the final three, but we'll talk to you next week. For now, you may pack your knives and go.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.